Hello, everybody. This is Rob Fredette with the podcast Hodge Pod, and we're going to talk about music tonight. I love talking to artists, musicians about their music and how they got into the business. And I have a special guest, Stephen DeJoseph, and he recently came out with an album in December called Songs, Dreams, Circumstance in December of 2023. I'm going to let you talk about it. I've listened to the album, Stephen, and I have it on my playlist. So welcome to my podcast.
Cool. Thank you so much, Rob. It's great to be here, really. Anyway, I know we had this schedule, we had to juggle the schedule a little, but it worked.
Yeah, I know. And then right before I was supposed to get on, it's a good thing I have a backup mic because my mic stand on my other mic broke and I had to get the other one out of the out of the desk here. So I had to, so I appreciate your patience. So thank you.
So absolutely, for sure.
So Stephen, your album came out in December of last year, so how long did it take you to do the album, Songs, Dreams, and Circumstance? And what were some of your inspirations like growing up in music? Welcome.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. The inspiration for these songs, so this is a very special collection for me because it represents songs that were written over near 30, written and recorded near over a 25-year period, at least, maybe more. And some were released on other albums and some were not. Mm-hmm. So when I got this distribution deal with Decco and with the Warner Music Group, ADA, I was just over the moon. And I was like, I have all these songs that I want the world at large, as much people as can be reached to hear. So I put that together. The title came from not so much that there's a song called that yet, right. But it was just because these songs were kind of born of these various experiences in my life. And I felt like it was an interesting way to, you know, frame it.
Interesting. So how do you come about, I've talked to musicians on my podcast, and how do you come up with writing a song and how do you devise it with the lyrics and then the sound? I always find that fascinating that the final product always sounds perfect when it comes out on an album. So how do you go to see devising an album?
Well, with songs for me, I mean, I have a condition I call multiple genre disorder. So it depends on what genre I'm working in. I also write instrumental music. And so when I'm working on a piece of vocal music, mm-hmm. then I'm kind of a lot of times the ideas are coming while I'm playing, working out an idea, musical idea, like lyrics hit me. I don't know why the song will simultaneously. It's almost like the song's telling me what it's going to be about in some cases. Sometimes one of the particular songs to be found was, I was actually literally in walking through the city of Philadelphia and I saw a man that pretty much seemed like he was homeless, but he was an artist and he was painting. And I crossed the street to get closer. It's part of the lyrics. So that whole song talks about that experience. Other times I'm more, I don't know if the word's ethereal or eccentric, perhaps, mm-hmm. Where the ideas are not maybe born as so literally, you know.
Artists will like put a song away or they'll devise it over a long period of time. And then some musician or you'll hear they'll think about it at 2 a.m. and they'll write down the lyrics and they'll get the guitar riff. Yes. So it's pretty interesting how songs are conceived. And it's always amazing how the final product, like when you were doing your album, the final product sounds so great. So that must be a lot of fulfillment for you when you get that done.
Very exciting always. I mean, it's, and sometimes the idea of done doesn't maybe feel like done, but I will say in this time we live in, it's really cool that people like to hear other versions of things and they like to hear unplugged versions, but also remixes or so when I put something out now, I'm just satisfied. I'm just making sure I'm satisfied with the production and the presentation. But if I have other ideas about it, that could end up in people's ears as well eventually, you know? So I think that's the great thing about people wanting that stuff, you know, the outtakes on all that kind of good stuff.
Right, correct. And What inspirations did you get as you were getting into music and growing up? Who were your inspirations for the sound and maybe how you went about writing your songs?
Inspirations. Man, there were so many. So if I'm talking about the vocal music, I would say artists like Steve Winwood, Peter Gabriel, Janet, the Beatles, of course.
Yes.
Cat Stevens, mm-hmm. These kind of people were Paul Simon. They were all influences to me lyrically and melodically, and because they're icons to me, and I think they are to anyone because they set up a lot of what takes place. And you know, it's always like that in history. You know, something comes before and it sets a precedence, you know, and it's so those things are were always in my ear. And then I was deeply into instrumental music, and so all those people who influenced me were different, like composers like Claude Debussy and Beethoven and Ravel, and then the jazz players like Chick Corea and Herbie Hancock. And so it for me, there's a lot of influences that have pushed me, helped me to unfold what I wanted to do.
You know, it's interesting. This morning I was listening Steve Winwood, Split Decision, from his album in the mid-80s. And that song is so awesome. I was loving it. I had to play it again. It was just incredible how he sang that song. It's funny that you said Steve Winwood.
His voices, man. Yeah, those guys.
Yeah, it's just amazing. It's amazing how, like, that music just – all music stands the test of time. But just hearing that you mentioned Steve Winwood, I thought that was pretty neat. So do you devise something? You devise something from each artist into your song. So it was like, if you have a song, you devise something maybe from like jazz and then maybe Paul Simon intertwine into the song.
Usually what would happen is that sometimes it would remind me of someone when I'm working on it. And that would kind of give me a direction. And then I would be like, I was always like, okay, it sounds like that person, but I want to change whatever that is and retain the element of an influence, but go in another direction. So I think that sometimes I would be like, oh, that reminds me of the Beatles, or this reminds me of Elvis Costello or something like that. And I would follow that. And then it would lead me into something. Maybe I felt, okay, that's different enough. Mm-hmm. That, you know, I won't be sued, but I don't think I'll ever have a problem with that, because when music is so it's outside, it's not very often that somebody says that song sounds just like this, you know, and it doesn't, you know, which is good and bad, you know, but then like when I get into the instrumental stuff, a lot of like Chopin and Debussy would influence my writing. But again, you know, I would take it in whatever direction I felt that I could capable of going, you know?
Mm-hmm. So Songs, Dreams, Circumstance is the album. How long did it take you to get the whole album into the final product, rehearsals, takes?
Yeah.
How long did that take? Because I'm always fascinated. You hear some groups and musicians bang it out in no time, do it in one take. And how long does it take to devise an album? I'm always fascinated by the dynamic of putting something together for the final product.
It is fascinating. I'm fascinated by how other people do it. You know, it's just, I am a musician and a fan at the same time. You know, I can look at someone playing. I can even look at, I'm a pianist. That's my main instrument, but I can look at someone playing the piano and going, how are they doing that? You know, and I'll sit down and I'll do something like it, you know? And so it's just, I don't know how to explain that, but it kind of gives me the advantage of being a fan and being able to absorb music from that kind of angle. And, I may have gotten off your question.
No, that's fine.
Could you repeat it one more time?
Yeah, yeah. Basically, like, who do you...
Oh, I know what it was. It was, how does an album come together? How long does it take? And if you're if you're working for a label and they say, we need an album in a month, you know, you approach it differently than if like, nobody's saying anything except, you know, your muse is going like, you need to make something, you know? Mm-hmm. So, a lot of times with my work, it was my own drive that was pushing me. It wasn't this. There was one time early in, like in the around 90, that I was working on an instrumental album, but I was working with several people for the production, and it was a process of collaboration more with my album. Like with my own albums, I would be the person to get musicians and book the studio and plan it.
Wow.
And so I'd have to do all of that. This album has a lot of people on it because it was a lot of different recording situations in New York, in Philadelphia, in the suburbs of Chester County, if you're this region where I live, in California a little bit. So, and then just different engineers and different bass players and drummers. So that as the individual in charge of the, you know, steering the ship, that's how it goes when you're like a solo artist, I should say. But it's not by no means, you know, it can be realized as a solo artist where you create all the, like some of the songs, I did all the instruments. There's a couple of those. I just wanted to do it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not a hard, fast rule. It's just that it's the same way I got into making video because I could, you know, the Mac computer offered that tool, the iMovie tool. And I was like, oh man, you know, I don't have $5,000 to make the video I want to make right now in the 90s. So I'm going to make it myself. And I get a camera and I start experimenting, having a blast because I just like creating stuff, you know, whatever it is. So, yeah. So the process can vary greatly. It can be, if you have a tight band and you've been playing the songs for a while and you go in studio, you can knock out an album in a few days. You know, I mean, it's a, now just a little side note, Peter Gabriel has an album called So from 1986. What an amazing album, right? So I listened to one of the fellows who was an engineer on that session named Kevin Killen, I think your name. So he went there to be for 2 months in England to work on it and ended up being there for 18 months.
Wow.
And they remixed it almost three times, I think. So but that's like Peter was not held back by the label and he wasn't held back by money. It was back artistry. He wanted it to be a certain way and that's what he did. So I don't think it's like, I don't know. And now it's a day of people put out singles. So you're going to finish a single and then put it. I can take this album and release singles throughout the year and I probably will be doing that with videos and stuff like that. I'm sorry for talking so long.
No, that's fine. I find that fascinating because when an album is put together, like you mentioned, Peter Gabriel, he probably had the cachet to say, hey, they knew he was in charge. So he had the cachet to say, that's the final product. And that was a tremendous album. Tremendous, tremendous, tremendous.
Just incredible. Yeah, yeah. So I when I think of the process of making an album, it's, like I said, if you have specific band sound and you guys are playing a lot, you can do a live album, you can do, you know, an in-studio situation. Some bands don't like to start separating instruments and vocals and all that kind of crap, you know, which is, you know, it lends for a certain way. But, I mean, you can't say you can make a great album either way. It really just depends on the artist involved and the producer. You know, like people talk about Gabriel, but Daniel Lanois was the producer of So. And you always got to nod to the producer because, man, that's like, I having done production myself for my own things at times, I understand that, you know, you're always asking other people's, like, what do you think about this? You know, what do you think about this? So I'm sure like Daniel and Peter worked closely on that piece, you know, and other pieces.
So you said you had to go to like New York, Philadelphia, Los Angeles, and Chester. If you had
Westchester, PA was, well, it was Valley Forge, actually.
And then you basically had to deal with different band members, so you had to get like a feel and attraction with them. So that must have been exciting, but to get that traction, did you find any obstacles along the way, or did you see that everything fall into place?
I was always very, and I still am always very like, this is what I do. There's no other choice. So whatever I need to do is like, I always found really good musicians because there's a lot around Philly. And there were certain people that I worked with maybe a couple more, a little bit more often than I did others, but some I played gigs with afterwards. But they're all excellent musicians. And the person, there's a song on this album called Bigger Than This. And the fella that spearheaded this project, the project for me, passed away about 8 years ago. And Jeff Bernstein, and he helped me like embody, I should give birth to the song and the direction of the album that I was working on, and helped me with vocals. He did the bass and the percussion. And you know, now when I listen to it after it's being remastered, I'm just like, you know, I was like, Jeff, you did a great job. You know, I was like, amazing. I'm glad to bring it out further, you know, and have more people hear it.
So when you perform in front of an audience and when you're doing a concert, what is it like? I always find it cool when you watch bands and they're performing and everybody's got their own little piece of the pie, the teamwork. What's that like? Because yeah. I'm not musically inclined, and I probably go all over the place on the stage and things like that. But everybody seems to be in sync, and they know what they're supposed to do, which I find to be really awesome. And, you know, yeah. a single artist. So what do you take from that? Because I always find, like, if you watch old concerts or if you see a concert, uh-huh. it's amazing just the teamwork and the collaboration with all the musicians and singers.
That's always amazed me how good bands can play together. I mean, I've been in a few bands, and one was just a duo. It was like a Celtic jazz duo, and you know, it took time, but we got some pretty tight stuff going on. It was really quite exciting to, you know, when you hit on with someone else and you're like mm-hmm. tight like that. It's another worldly experience, you know. It's like outside your body, but your body's involved, you know. Using with the other band, it was a progressive rock project, mm-hmm. and excellent musicians, you know, just writers, everything great. That was also very cool and very different than all of it's just different playing solo, because you know you're the orchestra, you're the conductor, you're, you know, of the solo piece, and you know. I think I've done a lot of solo work because I can, and because I enjoy an aspect of that, and it seems the way I wrote, you know, were some of these solo pieces, you know. But I also enjoy the band thing. So having a band together as an entity and a business has always been a challenge for me, I find.
Mm-hmm. So I've also seen you've done a cover on piano for the Yes song Roundabout, and I love the position you had on the piano for it. That is probably one of the most difficult songs ever composed, in my opinion, but just because it's an 8 minute long song and there's all different things going on, and you did it 8 minutes on a piano. So how do you remember all the notes? I find that to be fascinating.
It took me nearly a year to, this is me, I can't say everybody would be the same, but it took me nearly a year to get the arrangement the way I felt it was there, close to there, mm-hmm. as near as I'm going to get. So, I took it section at a time and learned the parts like musicians normally do. You learn the parts, you know, but I had to think, I go, okay, I'm playing all the parts on, you know, on piano, and I want to make it pianistic, you know, I mean, like it's a piano piece. So I leaned on the directions of like stride piano, the old players, and kind of brought that. It just seemed to roll along with that. So, like I said, I got all the musical parts together. Then I had to think about mm-hmm. how it was being played on a piano, and that it is a piano. I'm not trying to sound like, yes, this is not going to work. So it's one of the best decisions I've really ever made to do that, because I got to connect with, well, eventually now, I guess most recently I was told that it got into the hands of John Anderson, which blows my mind how that all came about.
Wow.
Because when I did, yeah, it's crazy. I did the piece. I finally made the video. I put it out. I promoted it like crazy. I started meeting people. I met two guys that had worked with Anderson. And then I met the label Deco. And we had a conversation and I got into that project and put this album out. And the PR agency that helps with Deco also helps with Anderson and other progressive rock artists. So I was like, holy cow, how did this, what a circle, this, what a full circle. So the label guy said, I'll get it to the PR guy and maybe he could get it to Anderson. I don't know where it lies at this point, or, you know, John, he's an icon and, you know, he can't, I don't know if he'll respond or not, but just knowing that that happened is, wow, you know.
That is tremendous. And that, when you think about Isn't it, that wild? That, yeah. That's pretty wild. It is wild. And you have to see it on, is it on YouTube or is it on, you have a website where you can see it? Because I think it's really fascinating.
It's everywhere. It's on my website. It's on YouTube. It's on Facebook.
It is absolutely phenomenal. And I don't know how,
thank you.
I don't know how people like you or musicians play in instruments. It's just so incredible how you have to remember each note and things of that nature. I saw Yes in 1998 here in Memphis at the Mud Isle Amphitheater, and warming up for them was Alan Parsons Project. That was a phenomenal.
Oh, man, how cool is that?
That was cool. Yeah, I really enjoyed that. That was the bomb. Man,
Alan Parsons. Yeah, Alan Parsons. I couldn't believe I don't know why I didn't really know this, because I usually look thoroughly at album covers and stuff. But Alan Parsons was like had a deep influence on the and engineered, I think, and even produced the Dark Side of the Moon.
Wow.
And I was like, yeah, I know. It was, you know, I was like, holy cow. And I could hear that. I realized that, or, you know, I finally read that part of the album. I was like, wow, I can hear how that would be, you know, how he was involved in that. And it's an interesting thing so you have at the top, I think you have people who are like, you have autistic art musicians that can just play like they can record it in their brain and have it comes out their hands. I've watched these folks and it's, you know, it's beyond practicing. It's not, right, you know, yeah. It's phenomenal. It's a phenomenon of the spirit, you know? So when you get more to, like, you work hard to get things, I had to, with, you know, having Tourette's and stuff has played a huge role in my life and in my music, because it presents different way. You have to, it's kind of, you know, you have, I'm glad I'm living in a time when people are like, they accept people learn in different ways, you know, because it must have been incredibly hard for people when they had to all learn the same way, because we don't. And I'm sure that you know, learning complex pieces was, for me, it was challenging, but I loved it so much that it was like, I didn't want to do anything else. You know, as a kid, as an adult, and I didn't.
Wow, that's
so. There it is.
Pretty awesome. And you know, when I was listening to Roundabout, I listened to it today, as a matter of fact, because I wanted to see that great song. But to me, if I'm out in left field, let me know. But it had little twinges of Pink Floyd in the song. Would I be way off saying that or no?
I don't think so. I mean, I think, you know, not they're all English.
Yeah, not to say that it sounded like it, but it just had maybe a little. Right.
Yeah, I mean, I have no doubt. I mean, these guys intermingled. I mean, like Rick Wakeman played with David Bowie. He played the string parts on, I think, Space Oddity. He was like the only cat. Like David Bowie was like, hey, can you help me out with this? You know, your strings. I know you would at Mellotron. And, you know, he's like, so he comes in. Oh, I know how to work that thing. You know, so he played the Mellotron for him on that. You know, and then he played. Rick Wakeman played on Cat Stevens' Morning Is Broken, played the piano. So they were all, you know, interacting in some level or other. I mean, they were just, it was such a renaissance time, you know. I mean, all these, when I think of these specific artists, you know, there was just an explosion of creativity. No one band was like the other, you know, and yet they had these elements, like you said, you know, you could hear, that's kind of
just a little bit, just a little bit, just a tad. It's like getting off on a tangent here. When you listen some to the early Kink, the early Kink songs, this almost sounds like the Beatles a little bit. I mean, it's amazing.
Right, the sound, absolutely.
The similarity I just found to be really awesome. I just love it. So,
right. And Dave Clark 5.
Yeah, Dave Clark 5, absolutely. Yes, sir. So let's talk about your album. One song I really like is Ride. I really I really like the album, and I continue to listen to it. So I really appreciate the time you put into it is phenomenal.
So talk about
like the song Ride, for instance. How long did that take, if you can remember, and maybe give some insight onto that?
Yeah. Well, Ride, Ride was one of those songs that had the chorus, Ride That River, repeating. And it had a certain, it kept reminding me of the song Bluebird by Paul McCartney. I'm a bluebird, you know, that song. And it had this Ride That River, it had this certain, for me, it was like, you know, so I kind of started to build the song out of that. And then I came up with the lyrics, the words and lyrics and the lyrical trajectory. I think I was just thinking about attitudes of among humans, different humans, that, or this prevailing attitude that can be like, well, I'm the center of the universe, and there's really, there's other stuff, but it's me, it's like, it is sort of, and so I wanted to address that thing of like, don't you ever look at the stars and wonder, don't you ever look at the ocean and think I'm tiny, right. It's like, not valueless, mind you, but just being aware of it's all really good. So the idea was ride the river out to the ocean. Don't resist the flow of the motion. Maybe that's what surrender is about. So that's how that song grew lyrically. And then musically, I put it together and did it in the studio, and got a hold of this bass player named Rob Swanson. And as far as I'm concerned, he was part of the writing of that song, because he did this amazing those fretless bass lines that he did are such beautiful melodic textures. And then I played it for a friend of mine, Tom Grant, and he said, the drums sound so regular, it's not common or something, like it's like maybe it could be more interesting. That made me take it home and take out the drums and put in all the stuff that I did, and I did all that stuff in my studio. So I was like, I just wanted to experiment, and I felt like, hey, So that's how Ride ended up being where it is.
I love that story. So one thing I'm going to start asking my guests from here on in on my podcast is like, just as far as music's concerned. So just a couple of questions about music. Don't mean to put you on the spot, but it's a fun little
feel
deal.
Feel free.
So what was the last song you heard on your playlist? What group and what song was it?
We have to think about that, because I intermix it. Well, I'll tell you what, it was in my car, has a CD player in it. So that's how old it is.
That's all right.
It's a 2013 Honda, and still runs great. It has a CD player in it. I was listening to Frank Zappa.
Wow. Frank Zappa.
Yeah. Man. Frank Zappa. And the album's called, I think, you can't do that on stage anymore.
Wow.
I think that's the name of the album. And, Frank, I mean, it's iconic, right? So it's amazing. So that's what I was listening to.
So if you're having a bad day and you hear what one song can turn your attitude into a upset, like, or maybe off kilter, and then put it right, reset or recalibrate you on your day, what song would that be?
Roundabout. I know I'm so dated, but like at the same time. There's a couple of, still older, but John Mayer, I've liked his stuff. I find a lot of new artists on like Instagram and TikTok and stuff like that. And it's like almost, that's the place to discover people, because it's like hands on. It's like right out of fresh out of their bedroom or their studio. It's like, I love what Billie Eilish does. I would say Roundabout inevitably will turn my mood around.
Yeah, absolutely.
It just gets me going. It gets my blood going.
When I listened to it today, it's still hard to fathom. That song came out in 1971.
Yeah, and, I know, right?
And you know what? You don't even hear those songs anymore on the radio anymore.
It's crazy.
Streaming. It's amazing.
I think I came across these two fellows. They were they were in a Slavic country, and they were young kids. They were maybe 22, 24. And they're like, today we're going to cover, you know, the song Roundabout, you know? And I'm like, what? So I'm going like, oh my God. So they're sitting there listening to it for the first time. And I'm going like, oh man, this is cool. You know? And they're like, the kid's jaw was like, and he stops. He's, no way, man. They can't have done this 50 years ago, you know? And I was like, yeah, they did, you know? So it still stands, really stands the test of time, you know? It's like, you know, they don't get old, those songs, you know?
Yeah, my song for me that puts me in a good mood if I hear it is Genesis Misunderstanding off the Duke album. I love that song. I love that song.
It must be some understanding. Yeah.
I love, I'm not a singer, but I can, when he's singing it, I can sing every lyric with him. And I love the video. He's driving in the convertible down Los Angeles, sunny LA, Sunset Strip, you know.
Oh, that's cool.
That was great. That's a great song.
Work it out with someone. It's awesome, man. And I was just going to say, you know, the Beatles stuff is always like, you know, She Loves You. It's like, you know, it's such a simple and happy song. It's like, you know, and it's that kind of stuff put me in a good mood too.
You know what's great about the Beatles? Here's some of their albums early on. It's like you hear some of the mm-hmm. albums, they have like seven takes of one song. It's really incredible how they do, like they'll say take two and then they start singing, and some of the takes sound better than the original, the final product.
I know exactly what you mean. it's pretty incredible. It's pretty incredible when you hear that.
So you're in Philadelphia. What's the music scene in Philadelphia like? Philadelphia is still prominent in the soul music.
Funk. I think like you'll hear some funky stuff. You know, you'll definitely always hear. There's a lot of jam bands, and there's a lot of bands that like to cover Fish and Grateful Dead. I have a promoter friend who does a lot of jam band events, mm-hmm. and people love that kind of stuff. There's free jamming, you know. It's like now, you know, for jamming for me is like really out there, you know, doing whatever you feel like doing. But those jam bands are covering a specific style, you know. They're exploring, they're playing the Dead, and they're moving in that direction. Then there's some progressive bands for sure, like in Northern Jersey and that region. There's a New Jersey prog house, and they bring in prog bands from all over the world for that kind of stuff. There's several prog festivals, let me see if I, I can't check. Progtober, I think it's called. I forget right now. But then, you know, you'll hear a lot of singer-songwriters, and that varies. Nostalgia is a thing, too. Like the tribute bands, there's a lot of tribute bands around here, or they come through, you know. So it's a pretty good mixed jazz. There's definitely great jazz, you know. So you can really find almost anything, you know, pretty well. I mean, a lot of styles here. Classical, there's plenty of that, you know.
Yeah. So. And, you know, you mentioned tribute bands here in the Memphis area. I've seen with bands for Journey, ABBA, the Eagles, McCartney, Billy Joel. Uh-huh. So those are just five off the top of my head that I can name off that, you know, those acts aren't around anymore. So people thrive on nostalgia, like you were saying. People want to hear those songs, mm-hmm. whether it's for a tribute band or just some of the band members. People still want to hear it.
Yes, without a doubt. I played at a place in Bethlehem. There's an area, a town called Bethlehem, that has a lot of arts and has some great venues. And I was playing in the lower portion of this venue, and then upstairs was a Fleetwood Mac tribute band named Tusk. And man, they're spot on. The girl, like, you know, you're looking at her. It's like, is that Stevie Nicks? It's got to be Stevie. She just was like everything. She just was like a great actress and a great vocal, like covering her vocal, man. So I respect that. I mean, if I were not doing like so focused on original music, I think that would be a good thing to do because, you know, it pays really well. And you're playing great stuff all the time, you know, and you're playing to listening audiences. It's really, so I think it's great that that happened, really. I mean, some of these bands just really, there's a band that covers Genesis called Musical Box.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you've ever heard.
No, I haven't.
And there was, they even got the stamp of approval from, like, I think Collins or Gabriel, you know, where they get to, you know, the Watchers of the Sky, they get to where he wears the outfit. And so, you know.
Man.
It's what it is, right? It's just,
well, it's like you
there's watch, room for everything.
Yeah, you watch commercials on TV. People love nostalgia, hearing old songs. There's a song out now for one of the truck companies. They play Grand Funk Railroad, and it's like, wow. I've
heard that
song 1,000 times, and it's like, it just, people love nostalgia. That's what I love about it.
And did you know, I don't know if you knew this or not, but Todd Rundgren produced one of their big albums.
No, I did not know that.
Yeah, Todd Rundgren. He did American Band, I think it was, Grand Funk Railroad.
Man,
oh yeah, man. Isn't that crazy? Todd became pretty big in the production side of things and still is an amazing musician to play. I mean, like, I saw him in concert, like, right before COVID, and he's like, he was like 71 or 72 or something. He's like walking around playing like crazy and still, you know, it was beautiful. Yeah. It was amazing. He was excellent. It was just, you know.
Well, Stephen, talk about your album again. When did it come out? And you've had some. Happy. How many albums have you come out with in your career and musically? So you can let my listeners know. Where can you get your album?
Well, you can just go to StephenDJoseph.com. That's with Stephen with a P, StephenDJoseph, StephenDJoseph.com, and that'll be right there in front of you. You can listen to it. You can stream it. And you can purchase CDs. You can also download it, you know, so it's all right there. And then I've probably done pretty much like about 11 albums, I suppose, you know. Now that's like over 40 years, so I don't think it's a lot of albums, but it's certainly – I've also done a lot of video productions and singles. And I was calculating my gigs. It's near 8,000 gigs.
8,000 gigs?
Yeah, since I started playing. I started young, and I started playing in rock bands, and I was in a wedding band, and that played a ton, you know. Then I got a progressive rock band, and I played solo.
Man.
I've been mostly myself. Yeah, so it's this is my living and my livelihood and my life, so I just, yeah. I've mostly in the U.S. I have had a nice handful of things in Europe, and then as, you know, with Tourette's, I became an advocate for neurodiversity. And that's, you know, every time I'm on stage, it's that way because it's visual, you know, you can tell that something's up, but I've worked it into my show. And so I also started to speak about it. So that opened up a speaking direction. So, so I'm involved with performing and speaking.
That is tremendous. And, the name of the album is Songs, Dreams, Circumstance by Stephen DeJoseph. It came out December of 2023, and 7 songs, 54 minutes. It's a very album. I think you'll like it when you hear it. Even I can't thank you enough. I know we've played tag on the scheduling part. I know with our busy lives. So, but I want to really thank you very much for coming on and carving out some time for me. I really appreciate it. I really enjoyed this.
Me too. My pleasure, Rob.